Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel through the past before we stop here in the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donso, man. Tonight we're going to talk about politics in prison, 2015 and beyond. Before I get started, I want to make a little dedication, man, to my grandfather, my spiritual teacher, the great ancestor, the one who gave me the strength, man, to endure these type of hardships that I've been able to endure for almost two decades without me knowing. He instilled so much in me. I just want to say shout out to my grandpops. And I want to give a shout out, man, to a very inspirational ancestor, my man George Jackson, who I was introduced to in segregation and Red Onion when I was doing 2 years in the hole for something I didn't do back in the early 2000s. This brother's spirit resonated with me through his literature. And because of that, I feel like the man that I am today, in large part, is because of him. Shout out to them two great ancestors who endowed me with the spirit to continue to fight in this struggle. Today, I want to talk a little bit about the misconception of mass incarceration, God's behind the wall, and what is the purpose. Why it is that people are being fed certain images, certain ideas, certain notions about prison, prisoners, and the whole notions about why it is that the criminal justice system exists in the first place. So I want to start with the misconception, because I know a lot of people, when they think about prison, one of the things that they think about is the violence in prison. It's a pervasive idea amongst the people in society that prisons are these extremely violent places where men wake up every day in sheer barbarity, looking to have to protect their lives with shanks, when this could be further from the truth. In all actuality, probably the most violent element in the prison is the staff. And I'm not just talking about physical violence, but also spiritual violence and psychological violence. Believe it or not, prison is probably one of the most nonviolent spaces in America. A lot of us know or have heard recently, with all of the uproar about criminal justice reform, about the massive boom beginning in the mid-90s in the prison population that was largely due to the war on drugs. But what gets overlooked is that these people who were mass incarcerated and caused the prison system to boom maybe three times since the 80s were nonviolent prisoners. So the prison system has actually been inundated with a whole lot of nonviolent people. And so the prison system over the last 20 years has become increasingly nonviolent, while the perception of prison has become that it has become increasingly violent. So I want to definitely dispel that myth right there. Another myth about the prison and what goes on behind the wall is that there's rampant out of control homosexuality. So much so that even staff who work here go out and continue to promote that myth. But the reality is that it's actually not true. The average person in prison is not gay. Not that that is something that's wrong. My views on that is irrelevant in this moment. But the fact that people think that that is common and widespread in the prison system is false. Another issue in prison is that, or with the perception of prison, is that a lot of guys are just sitting around trying to lift weights, or everybody's running around, you know, trying to play games. And that's not true also. You have some real serious brothers in here, man, trying to make a difference and have an impact on the outcome of people's lives. And so that's some of the myths. Now, what's the truth about prison? What I would like for people to know is that the prison environment in the age of mass incarceration, first and foremost, is extremely authoritarian. And what I mean is there's a concept in prison now called control movement. The goal of control movement is to limit the amount of movement that prisoners have. But it's not just about movement physically. It's also about mental movement, psychological movement. There's an attempt to limit the self-efficacy or the ability of the prisoner to think and move and behave in a way that allows him to express himself freely. In doing that, in controlling the prisoner's not only physical movement but mental movement, putting the prisoner in what I like to call an infantile state, what they're able to do is prevent prisoners from being able to challenge or resist injustice. So there's a large authoritarian element. There's a dehumanizing element. And the dehumanizing element happens with the amount of castration and emasculation that happens by staff towards prisoners. Now, how does this happen? Well, every day we awaken at 6 in the morning and told to stand for count. This is the beginning. So they awake you out your sleep with this loud whistle, and they say, stand for count. And then you have to jump off the bed and stand for count. And then after that, they tell you when you can eat. They don't allow you to move freely to certain places. They don't allow you to pick and choose exactly what education programs you can be in. If they put you in an education program, you're expected to be able to complete that program before you can get into another program. So these things work to dehumanize the prisoner. And the emasculation comes in with the inequities in how it is that staff and prisoners are able to communicate and dialogue with one another. So if I cuss at a staff, it's a very good possibility that I'll suffer some type of punishment. But staff are able to cuss at me all day. These are some of the hidden secrets behind the wall. Now, prisons are also extremely depressing, or they can be. What happens is you put a lot of guys in prison and you don't give them the resources, the mental resources, the spiritual resources, and even the physical resources to equip them with the ability to thrive in an environment that's deprived like this, deprived from certain enrichment. So this, for someone who doesn't have the mental resources, the educational resources, to be able to thrive, like a la read, be able to write, be able to study, what happens is people go into a sort of psychosis. They get overwhelmed with chronic psychological disorders like boredom, anxiety, anger, frustration. And these things build up and they culminate into all different types of pathologies, personality disorders. So you got a lot of guys running around here, man, doing all types of things that they probably wouldn't do, like excessive masturbation or fighting with one another or just acting out because sheer boredom and depression is kicking in. The environment is also repressive. Repressive in a way that they try to prevent you from being able to exercise your citizenship rights. One of the main ways that they do that is through censorship. They have what they call the banned book list in prison. And the banned book list is a list of books that they prevent prisoners from owning because of the threat that they pose to the security or the orderly operations of the institution, is the technical phrase that they like to use. Now, some of the books that were previously on the list prior to a lawsuit being filed here recently was books like Odyssey, the autobiography of Malcolm X, books like Mumia Abu-Jamal and Malcolm Hill, The Classroom in a Cell, which is still currently on the banned book list. Books like the Huey P. Newton Reader. These books were considered to be threatening to the security and the orderly operations of the institution. And so because of this, these books were put on a banned book list, and prisoners were prevented from being able to read these books. And so this also happens with the way that mail and pictures come in. Here recently, my man sent me some pictures from the Million Man March. And because some black people was in the picture throwing up the peace sign, 15 pictures were sent back to him because under the guise that they had hand signs, which basically they were implying that the hand signs were gang signs. So this is the type of censorship that goes on to prevent what they consider to be threatening information from reaching the prisoner. And it's all a part of the attempt to repress us, keep us from being able to challenge the injustice that is the industrial complex. Another thing that happens is that they attempt to muzzle you, which is prevent you from being able to get your voice out. Now, tonight, because of some circumstances beyond my control, we had to start late. But I'm going to come back tomorrow night, and we're going to finish up with part two of this discussion and get a little bit more deep into the corporative aspect of prison. That's my time. Hopefully I'll meet you back here sometime tomorrow night for part two of the show. And I want to leave with a quote from my man George Jackson, who said, anybody who's black in the criminal justice system is a political prisoner because the system has dealt with you differently. Going back to tradition is our first step forward. Hotep and Yahuru. I'm out.